Open the five bay door, please, Hal.
That's not a boat. It's a space station.
Replicants are like any other machine. They're either a benefit or a hazard. They're a benefit, it's not my problem.
Patu, Barada, Nikto.
No, I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
By your command.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This is Earth Date, June 25th, 2007, and you're listening to
Raygun
Radio.
Raygun
Radio.
Raygun
Radio.
Raygun
Radio.
Raygun
Radio.
Raygun
Radio.
Welcome to a bonus edition of Raygun Radio, beamed from the space station Selene orbiting Titan. I'm your host, Admiral Rick Koppel, and Zoom Zoom, our usual co-host, is not here today. He's in his bunk sleeping, while I secretly, I'm going to give him a break to get this out. Last time we did an interview with Bill Snodgrass, and the show was on the longer side. You may think I gave you all that we talked about, but no! There was so much cut out, and it was so good that I didn't want to just leave it lying on the cutting floor never to see the light of space. So, I'm taking our discussion of Double Edge Publishing, Inc., its beginnings, and what it is doing, and giving that to you as a special treat. Bill had some interesting things to say, and I'm sure you don't want to miss them. In addition, we are throwing in a song by Jonathan Colton, The Big Boom, that I'm sure you will enjoy directly following the interview. So, sit back, relax, unless, of course, you're driving a car. Keep those hands on the steering wheel, eyes open. You want to live to hear the whole thing. And enjoy this added treat for June. Hold on. What's this? It's a note from Zoom Zoom. Dear Rick, I'm staying away from helping you with your bonus show. Otherwise, you would have to pay me an additional bonus? And I know your bank account is low. How did he know that? Tell your listeners to give us more money or we'll have to pull the plug. Ah, Martians. No, folks, we aren't going to pull the plug, but you are more than welcome to donate through www.doubleedgedpublishing.com, with two E's there, double-edged, if you so desire. It will help us to pay the hosting and registration fees and do more podcasts, and who knows what else we could do with that. But we'll continue to crank out great audio space opera either way. So now, on with Bill's interview. Tell us a little bit now about how Double Edge Publishing got started.
Cameron and I, our business since 1999, we've had a website design company. And so, of course, we think very highly of ourselves. And as I was looking for markets for my short fiction, I turned to a lot of the online web magazines. And at the time, this would have been 2 years ago. Of course, 2 years in the internet history is two or three revolutions.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2005, or rather in 2004, when I was actually looking for the markets, a lot of the things that were out there were done basically as static pages, each month having to update the entire site and add, you know, each piece of content. A lot of it was visually kind of dated, maybe drawing back on the early 2000, early maybe 2001 or so, sort of those techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And we found ourselves over and over again saying, well, we could do better. We could do better than this. Why are these guys? And at one point, we looked at each other and said, well, why don't we? And then our answer was, well, because we don't know anything about being magazine editors. And so we discarded the idea. A few more months passed, and a lot of other online publications were looked at. Some of them are literarily very good. They have very good literary value. Their publication quality is good. But as a website critique, we kept finding things to nitpick, and we kept thinking, well, we could do better. So we finally started actually talking about, probably in October of 2004, how would we do it? What would it look like? We grabbed the domain name because it was available and sat on it for a while. March of 2005 rolled around, and we had pretty much given up on it as the idea of it being done as a for-profit business, because everyone wants something for free. We knew that we weren't going to be attracting Stephen King and John Grisham and authors of that level who might entice someone through a pay portal. So we'd given up on it as a money-making enterprise, and so our thoughts turned to doing it as a public service, as a nonprofit, as a way of providing quality fiction, fiction with a moral core, something that the middle schoolers and high schoolers and adults alike would enjoy, and that parents wouldn't have to worry about offensive content or inappropriate materials. So that began the evolution, I guess you'd say. That began the early stages of thinking that was the Sword Review. We never really thought we'd ever publish any of our own works. Actually, I've had a couple. My name is Jim was reprinted. Actually, was reprinted both in the Sword Review as a bonus feature back in April, and then in Ray Gun Revival in December. And then my Valentine's Day story originally appeared at Revolution Science Fiction. It was reprinted in Harura as a Valentine's story because it was romantically oriented. The vision for the DEP magazines is that we're going to always be familiar to the average user, but we're going to be pushing the envelope. We want to be thinking about what's next. What is the next generation of web consumers going to be expecting? Or what is the current iteration of web consumers expecting? And making sure that we're delivering that and delivering it in a way that says credibility. The authors that we're publishing are really, really – the difference between them and the authors in Realms of Fantasy is how much money they got paid and the venue into which they were published. The standards are very high. And I can say this especially now that I'm not really part of any of the – reading. I'm not really reading submissions for any magazine now. So I can say the editorial teams are rejecting good stories on the grounds of literary value. And we're only really publishing stories that rise above good into the realm of exceptional or whatever accolade you want to apply there. We're publishing really good works. So we want the website to at least visually be on par with the quality of literature that we're putting out. Some of the stories and some of the poetry that's coming out of Harura is remarkable. And we want the site to be on par with that kind of work. So, and you'll see that at Ray Gun Revival. You'll see the quality of the PDF file is second to none. It looks like you have just, if it were in print, it would be a beautiful, slick, glossy magazine. We're really striving for that. And so from the web design perspective and the web architecture and the ergonomics, there are areas that can be improved, and we're working on those things. But we're doing it all with on the backs of volunteers. So when, someone has said, the navigation at Sword Review is a little clunky, well, true enough, and steps to get those things updated on the backs of volunteers, I think we respond really quickly when we keep that in mind. Not a single person working for any of the Double Edge Publishing has up to this point been paid. And that speaks to the commitment of the editorial teams as more than anything.
And the excitement of even going into some new magazine ventures is still there.
Oh, yeah. The next 18 months, we're probably entering what I guess you would call the second creation of Double Edge Publishing. We've got three new magazines that are in the works. One will be ostensibly horror, suspense, thriller, or something along those lines. It is going to be going by the name of Fear and Trembling. I think that is indicative of in some ways, of what the contents will be like. And the folks that have rallied around this idea represent poets, represent authors with resumes the length of your arm, a lot of really people. The excitement, I was actually, it sort of came as a, and we're also thinking about a horror magazine. And from the, well, we're also sort of maybe thinking about, it became really the fastest, most enthusiastic project that's in the works. The second project in the works is a magazine that's going to be geared to teens, and is going to be actually operated by teens. A group of teenagers are going to be the first line of editorial opinion. They're going to make the decisions of what goes in and what doesn't. And anything that they approve, of course, we will have an adult look at it from the possibility of, we're not going to get sued for this, are we? And, you know, the only reason the adult veto would be kicked in is if the adult sees something in the selection that might cause troubles down the road. So the adults are basically going to be kind of a safety net.
Right.
Not really picking the stories, but just kind of supervising the process along those lines. So this group of teenagers, and recently teens, I've been recruiting people who are really 14 to 20 to be the editorial crew of this magazine. It's pretty exciting. We're drawing from the MySpace and the ShoutLife social communities as a starting place for a market. Also, we'll have a web page of its own. And all three of these front ends will tie into the back end database that will drive the contents and tie into the forums as well. The forum communities have proven in all the magazines, and we expect it will be the case in the future projects as well. The last new project going to probably pick up some momentum as the summer rolls on. It's due to launch in the fall, and this will be a magazine centered in the romance genre. It will also include some other features and genres, perhaps, that will be of compatible interest. But the group, again, the enthusiasm of that group really was really quite surprising to see how many people came forward and the level of enthusiasm that they had for that project. I am excited to see how that's going to play out. And tapping into the romance market opens the potential for tremendous, tremendous growth and exposure to an awful lot of people.
Yeah, that was the excitement. I know, just it was just kind of mentioned as a something to possible do out off in the future somewhere, and
right.
About two or three people just immediately said, "Oh, I want to do that."
Exactly. Can I quit what I'm doing now?
Yes.
and go do that. Podcasting is another area that we're growing into. Raygun Radio being our first effort towards that, proving the ground. Obviously, podcasting offers an awful lot of advantages and reaches a different segment, or reaches maybe a similar segment, but reaches in a different way. A conversation Cameron and I actually had this evening while we were working on some other things was his enthusiasm for being able to download stories onto his iPod and listen to them. He's got about a 45-minute commute, mm-hmm. So that gives him 90 minutes of windshield time every day, round trip. That's good for a pretty good fiction read. So
right.
If you could read and drive at the same time, that would be one thing. I don't think the Highway Patrol would care for that much. So
that
would
be risky.
Yeah, yeah. So he's really looking forward to ongoing development of podcasts and other MP3 format presentations of works.
Right. That's going to be an exciting development, I think, just for a lot of people that have that kind of a commute, or even just sit at their computer while they're working on other things and like to listen to a story.
But we also have the idea of besides just having PDFs and HTML files, which basically present stories as text on a page, something that's been done since Gutenberg, we're interested in exploring other medium of story presentation. And this doesn't come easily, but the idea of the semi-interactive flash presentation, where mm-hmm. a story may be broken up into visual chunks, and each chunk oriented towards background sounds and ambient music and things like that, changing color and font as the mood changes, or having perhaps different fonts for different characters in the story. The sky's the limit, and the creativity of this new emerging generation of young technologists, I'm sure they have done things that we've not even imagined yet. And I think sticking ourselves into a text on a page, be it an electronic text on an electronic page or ink on paper, limiting ourselves to text on a page, I think, is selling ourselves short. I saw an account of Google's attitude and Google's approach about 2 years ago, I think, and the idea was they always wanted to be rolling out what the other guys were thinking of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could stay that far ahead, if they could stay on the cutting edge, the leading edge of the innovation, then they would always be a viable entity. Mm-hmm. And I think Double Edge Publishing can borrow from that to the capacity that we have, finances to support and volunteers to put it out there. So podcasting is not new. It's been around for a while. It's a new innovation for us, but it represents our commitment to going forward. And it's kind of interesting and perhaps ironic that the podcast represents a shift sort of back towards that oral culture.
True.
Of pre-Gutenberg cultures. And I was thinking about podcasting. There's a slight difference between how a story would be written for a podcast as opposed to how it might be written to be visually seen on a page. And I think this is evident. We've had a few submissions from an author who is visually impaired. And in these submissions, there's evidence that the story is being written as if it were to be spoken, rather mm-hmm. than as if it were to be scanned by the eye. Concepts of section breaks, which we represent with the pound sign or some cute icon, those kinds of representations are really not part of an oral tradition or a story that's specifically geared towards podcasting.
Right.
So I think it represents an interesting, almost an irony, that the podcast is returning and maybe making, or maybe perhaps tying into some of the, or paralleling, if not tying into, paralleling those practices of oral culture of the long, long past.
Having read some stories for the podcast that, like a scene break, well, how do you read that?
Right.
And so you have a pause or something of a little bit more length than what is normally going, and hope the people catch on what's happening. But yeah, there's all those little idiosyncrasies that aren't so clearly easily shown in a oral translation of the story.
Ellipses and M dashes.
Yeah.
Which visually tell us, or parenthetical expressions. These visual cues, they tell us something as our eyes play across them that adds meaning to the words. And without those visual cues, sometimes just the meaning of the words, absent those cues, may be somewhat different.
Right. And then it comes down to the interpretation of the reader, the kind of emotion they put into it, or the fluctuations and all those kind of things.
Right.
I think it's quite quite interesting. One of the things that you do quite a bit, it seems like every time I go to a forum somewhere, except there's one or two I've found. But most of the time when I go to a spot, you know, you're there. As a matter of fact, first time I signed on Shout Life, within, I think, minutes of signing on and starting to build my page there, you popped in. So you really have a lot of marketing that you do for the magazines. So I thought maybe there might be some marketing tips or ideas or thoughts that you have related to that.
Marketing, doing the internet marketing and posting in the forums and all, you've got to make sure it's going to be worthwhile. In our case, we consider it a successful venture if someone comes and reads a story. There's no money exchanged. We're not counting dollars. We're not counting how much money we made, how many widgets we sold. Up to this point, we haven't had a lot of books to sell. We're basically just trying to get people to come and read our story. So I can look at the server logs and see how many refers came from Shout Life and how many came from MySpace and how many came from here and there. It would be difficult to justify if there wasn't some economy to scale. And so you mentioned that I'm at a lot of sites. I have a tool that generates text for me so that I can cut and paste that text repeatedly. Or I just copy it once and then I just paste it repeatedly as I go down a series of websites in my bookmarks. And basically just I've been invited to, or invited myself to, make these updates, these announcements about updates in the various magazines. If I were to do that for just one magazine, it may take 5 or 10 minutes, and we may get one or two click-throughs based on that. But if I can do, you know, 10 forums in 8 minutes, and we get one or two click-throughs from all of those, I've basically have 10 times the effect for, you know, maybe twice the amount of time. And so at some point it becomes viable.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I shared this anecdote at the Mid-South Con, where I was on a panel of internet marketing. And a fellow in the audience said, okay, so you spend 10 minutes, and you do that twice a week, and you do that for four magazines, so that's So he's doing the math. So he goes 20 times 4. That's 80 minutes. That's, he goes, I type approximately, and he said some number of words per minute. And so he took the 40 minutes, and he said, okay, so over the course of the month, that amounts to half of a novel. And he said, this guy is a professional author, and he says, and so he said, in half of a novel represents somewhere between $2,500 and $25,000 for him, depending on the advance that he's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so for him, unless he was going to convert those 80 minutes a week into more than $2,500 a month, that it was a bad use of his time, and I completely agreed.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that his publisher is already out there buying ads in Realms of Fantasy and buying ads in Asimov and has the displays at Barnes & Noble and Borders and is on Amazon, of course, and all of mm-hmm. those things. His publisher is doing all of that PR for him. He can devote that time to his writing, and he gets a much better return, a much better dollar return on the time.
Right.
We don't have anyone else doing that for us. So if, you know, for us getting two click-throughs a day off of 10 websites, that represents a pretty good return on the time for us. So if you're going to do internet marketing, you have to decide what your win is. Because if you don't know what the win is, then you don't know if you have been successful in reaching your goal. If your win is selling one novel a week, or one of your, if you have a chapbook of poetry and you're trying to sell that, if selling one a week is a win for you, then what's the shortest path to get you to that win? And mm-hmm. what else could you do with that time if you weren't marketing and promoting your book? And so you have to do sort of really a time-benefit analysis to see what's your win and is the time that you're putting into it paying off.
Yeah, what would you think probably be the most productive marketing thing you've done for the different magazines?
Oh, that's being in Google is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Having images with file names that are not just like image 01.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of click-throughs from Google from people who have done image searches. Oftentimes they will click through to the page that has the image on it, and then from there we really don't know if they've followed links into the contents of the magazine or something else.
Right.
There's always the risk that, you know, someone's going to click on your page, see that it's not what they thought it was, and hit the back button immediately. And there's no easy, convenient way of just looking at server logs to know if that's happening. I think
right.
some of the larger forums, like Christian Writers, is one of the forums that has a very large population. There's an obscure little forum called Fantasy.net. Over the course of my posting there, the posts have been viewed something like 25,000 times.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know how many, I guess if I were to look in the server logs and see, but the posts have been viewed. So that means that, you know, because the forums itself counts how many times that particular post has been viewed. So it's up to something like 25,000 now. That's a pretty good number of people
looking
at
it.
Have looked at it and seen, you know, sometimes they'll come through and read the thing or not. I think Shout Life and MySpace are both really important places to have a presence. While they may not result in a lot of direct click-throughs, they do result in some. I post in my blog, I will post announcements about content updates. But having a presence there creates a sense of brand recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they may not click through because of that, but then when they see it in Google as in a search result, or when they come across a reference to it on another forum, it has some familiarity to them. And so I think those are very good uses of time.
It was 3 a.m. when I heard the sound. Stuck my head outside and I looked around. In the echo of the car alarms ringing, the sense of something terrible had happened again. Hit the lights and put the TV on, and they said that Michigan was gone.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 license.